Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
3-1 to Ohtani. The pitch swung on and drilled.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host David Sampson.
Stephon Diggs traded.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
From Buffalo to the Houston Texans.
What the hell going on?
Today's guests: ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg, USL Executive Vice President of Football Operations Daryl Johnston, Senior Writer for The Athletic Andrew Marchand, and now sitting in for Rich, it's David Sampson.
Yeah, welcome to the Rich Eisen Show. If you think you're looking at Rich Eisen, no, it's David Sampson. Happy to be here for 2 days. Happy to be with the guys. Happy to be on loan from Lebatard, who absolutely, I'm sorry to say, Chris, was not exactly loving the fact that I'm here, because your show is obviously bigger, greater, and more fantastic.
That's what I'm saying.
And with you guys here.
Emmy nominated, David. You know what I mean?
That's almost as good as winning.
Close.
It's not always better to win than to be nominated. I don't like when they say, hey, I'm really happy to have been nominated for an award. I don't agree with that.
Oh, you want
to
win.
Well, yeah, there's just winning.
We were happy to first get nominated. That's a fact.
Who lost the World Series last year? Don't remember.
I think it's eyewash when you say that. I really do.
Bro, until about last week, I couldn't remember who won the World Series, let alone lost
Texas,
the World
Texas,
Series.
Baby, got over the hump.
I think that we're going to take 2 days, and we're not going to say anything bad about baseball. We can say things bad about things that are going on inside baseball, but we're going to pretend.
TJ doesn't want to talk about the Mets.
I'm a Mets fan, David, so no, I can't subscribe to
you've
this.
Been nothing but miserable for decades. Yeah. No, but you had a World Series against the Yankees. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, and 2015 was a great year.
That was almost fun.
You know?
So. It could have been great. You were this close to greatness.
You know, yeah.
But people were fans of Mets and Jets, Knicks. Listen, I can't say anything. I'm a Knicks fan. My whole life. I mean, I was born right in 68.
Okay.
Yes, middle-aged, old guy. But I have not seen a Knicks championship because, unlike most people say, I remember everything from when I was 3-4 years old.
That's insane.
Which is
these people?
I
like, what is your earliest memory? Like, my earliest memory, I think, is like my first day of kindergarten. So I would have been 5. That's my earliest memory.
I think you're going to say you would have been 8, and I would have smiled that you had 4 straight years of kindergarten.
I've looked old since I was 16.
Eventually, you're going to look good.
Eventually, I'll grow into it. But that's what I mean. Like, these people are like, oh, yeah, when I was 2, I remember. No, you don't. Stop lying.
No, 2, no.
The reason why we don't look as good is that the makeup people, and by the way, amazing makeup here, 20 minutes on his dome. The rest of us had like 4 seconds to look good. And to take his shine off, we were almost late starting the show.
We were late. I had to like leave the meeting. I was like, yo, I gotta get work on.
I'm trying to prepare. I'm meeting Chris. I'm sitting in for Rich. I'm a little anxious, and I want to make sure I don't go full Albert Brooks and go into some sort of flop sweat, which I'm already feeling. The temperature in the studio, I don't know if Rich likes it this way.
No, it'll...
I'm going to go full diva and tell you it's way too hot.
No, it's cold.
It's hot in here?
Way too hot.
Wait till about 10:30.
It'll get cold.
No. It's freezing. People always ask us, why are you guys wearing coats and sweaters? You live in L.A. Like, bro, it is freezing in here all the time.
He's right, though. It is a little warm.
It is warm right now.
Del Tufo and I are also under this vent.
That's like,
third hour, middle, second hour, it gets real. The AC kicks on. And it gets really cool.
Like they're changing the arena over from basketball to hockey. That's what it feels like here for me.
Do you do a special thing? We do it over on the Lebatard side, is that we only pay for air conditioning for a certain number of hours. It's good for business. So they give me the early slot. So I've got the Schwitz slot where I do nothing. And then, now the air is on. We have so much to get to today. I mean, we could sit and talk about sports for 3 hours if you want without actually going through the rundown. We have great guests that I'm very excited about, starting with Seth Greenberg in just a couple minutes. And what happened in football yesterday was of great interest to me because I always, as having been in the front office for the number of years, when you make a trade, you have to try to convince people that you're doing the trade because you think your team's getting better. And almost always, that's a complete lie. And I think we should listen right now to what the GM of the Bills had to say about the Big Diggs trade.
These moves are never easy. Very hard. Not made overnight, anything like that. But anytime you make a move like this, as I said, very difficult, you're doing it. You're trying to win. And sometimes people may not see that you know, this is by no means the Bills giving up or trying to take a step back or anything like that. Everything we do, we're trying to win, and we're going to continue to do that. It's, you know, it's April the 3rd or 4th, whatever it is, and we'll continue to work on this roster and make sure we're ready to play come September.
When we tell people how to give press conferences, we try to say, don't say by no means. Because what you're really saying is, that's exactly what happened here. That we're not better. You can't trade Diggs. Am I analyzing this incorrectly as, in theory, a baseball guy?
Yeah, David, give your bona fides real quick. Because I don't know if our audience is that in tune with what your history's like.
5'5", 134.
Ding!
It's not terrible. 56. I was the president of the Marlins for 16 years. Won a World Series in 2003, beating the Yankees.
Bing, bing.
Which is good.
First off, as a Sox fan, thank you for that. And then thank you for trading us Josh Beckett and the throw-in Mike Lowell. Love that trade.
It was. We demanded they take Lowell.
Love that trade.
Because he had signed that deal and he had a terrible year and we thought that he was done. And so in order to get Beckett, it was with Larry Lucchino, who just passed away. So a little nod to Larry Lucchino, an outstanding executive. Yep. That trade was consummated. That trade, in theory, may have been one of the first causes of my divorce. Maybe. Because that happened.
Because your wife liked Mike Lowell?
No, funny, but no. Okay. Because that, if you go back in time, that trade was finished on Thanksgiving. And I had a young child who was sick at the time, and we were at a Thanksgiving dinner. And I excused myself from the table, because when you run a baseball team, and I did it for 18 years, it doesn't matter what day it is. There's no Hanukkah. There's no Christmas. There's no holidays. Yep. You work every day.
It's like working in sports.
It's like doing a daily show.
Yep.
We post every day here on the Rich Eisen Show, whether Rich is here or not.
Boom.
We're going to be here, all of us. And so that trade to bring Beckett to the Red Sox was huge because we wanted to get rid of Lowell's contract. And it gave us Hanley Ramirez, who they really wanted to get rid of because they were worried about whether or not he would turn into a player.
Yeah, he was the number one Sox prospect at the time.
It was a really good trade for both teams, actually. Now, you guys got rings out of it. We did not.
Yep. And we ended up getting Hanley back later on in his career.
That was older Hanley?
Older Hanley.
Different. That was I want to be Manny Ramirez Hanley.
I mean, he almost was for a season.
Other than the drugs and the results, he was exactly Manny Ramirez.
Minor detail.
Just very minor. Totally
minor detail.
I just, when you're talking about the Diggs trade, I actually could way go back to that Red Sox trade, because what's even funnier about the Red Sox trade is the year that all that happened, because in 03, Aaron Boone hit the home run.
I know. Yeah.
And so the Red Sox were despondent and they wanted to win. At that time, there was still the curse. They had never won a World Series. So they would do anything. They needed a number one, and that was Beckett.
Not hyperbole, the game 7, 03, one of the worst days of my life.
One of the best for me.
That means you've had a great life.
Not hyperbole.
Yeah.
One of the worst.
When people say that, I question. That means you're a lucky person. If Aaron Boone's home run is the worst day of your life, you've had a charmed life.
It was terrible.
It was amazing for a Yankee fan.
So good.
And also, by the way, it was terrible. And it was also totally predictable. Like, I knew it was going to happen. Because as a Sox fan, you're tortured. You're supposed to expect the worst thing to happen prior to 2004. And so Wakefield comes in. Wake was great, by the way, passed away recently, rest in peace.
And his wife.
And his just a terrible tragedy would happen to his family.
Yeah.
Wake was awesome, but at that moment, Boone's hitting a home run here because we didn't score in the top half of that inning. And it was, he's hitting a home run, we're going to lose. And then it actually happened.
You're such a defeatist. We were on the team bus. We had beaten the Cubs, and we were on the team bus at the entrance at O'Hare Airport to the private aviation part. And the game was on the TVs on the bus because we couldn't board the plane because they couldn't file a flight plan because we didn't know whether we were flying to Boston or New York. We had hotel reservations. We were going to one of the two cities. So the pitch goes, Aaron Boone swings, and the gate opens as though it was Bruce Almighty doing it. Somehow the guys at O'Hare knew that, all right, we can board the plane and go to New York now. And we were happy because we wanted to beat the Yankees. Right. It wasn't enough to beat the Red Sox. Beating the Yankees was way more fun. And we put the Yankees logo on our ring, and George Steinbrenner threatened to sue us.
Oh, really?
He did. That he said, you have no permission to use our logo. And we went to Bud Selig and said, you know, we're not changing our ring. Let him sue us. We're putting the Yankees logo on.
Incredible power move by Steinbrenner, though, to just threaten it.
Yeah, empty threats.
It's great, but that's what he was.
He was. He actually had some threats that he followed through on. He fired more managers than I did, which is not easy.
No. Okay,
to do it once a year.
We could do this all day. Analyze what Brandon Bean is saying here.
I want to talk about. Thank you. When you trade a player like that, you can't argue to your fan base that your team's better. And so we would tell our GM, don't even go down that road. Let's talk about going forward. We're not even going to address the trade. We're not going to talk about the second round pick that's coming up in 2 years. Fans don't care. We're not going to talk about the picks that we gave up. We're simply going to say this was a move made in the best interest of our organization. And we would want him to leave it at that. And not only did he not leave it at that, but he kept going and actually contradicted what he said earlier.
Fans of Stephon for the last 4 years, what would you say to them if they ask, how are you better in 2024 with him on the roster, still counting against your cap in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, are we better today? Probably not. Yeah, it's a work in progress, and we're going to continue to work on that. I would just hope that people know I'm as competitive as hell, and I ain't giving in, and we're gonna work through this, and we're going to continue to look, and I'm confident in, the guys we have on the roster, and I'm confident you know, the staff we have upstairs that helps me, that we'll continue to find pieces to add and that we'll be ready to roll when it comes time in September.
So which is it? Is he confident in what he has? Or does he need to, it's a work in progress that he'll be ready for September? I was confused by that entire press avail, and I think that it did nothing to assuage any Bills fans anywhere other than Diggs. He made a power play, did he not?
What would you tell Bills fans today, as you, a former exec, hearing these comments? Like, what would your message be to Bills fans?
That player empowerment is real, and it's pervasive, and it's not just the NBA, and it's clear that he wanted out, and often we will allow a player to get his wish because they make it incredibly difficult. They can make the clubhouse a problem. They can make the locker room, the front office. They can infect players. We actually map out where we put players in the locker room because we don't want certain players next to other players because we think they'll have a negative impact. Conversely, we'll put players next to players when we want them to become friends because we think they'll have a positive impact. Right. And so everything's purposeful. This trade, the way it happened, to me was purposeful, and I think it's okay to tell the fans that. And they went a totally different direction.
Yeah, that's so interesting because, like, on the surface, if you're a Bills fan, you think, look, this has been a very productive, borderline superstar player for us the entire time he's been here. We have a finite Super Bowl window with a quarterback that we just paid a lot of money to and who's a perennial MVP candidate, and we have got nothing to show for it. Also, we've got the famous 13-second game. We kind of struggled last year, made the playoffs, but still didn't make a championship game, didn't make a Super Bowl, obviously. And so I'm just wondering if Bills fans think, like, Jesus, like, are we wasting Josh Allen's prime here? Is our Super Bowl window closing?
I think it's pretty easy to say. We can look back at the Packers last year. No wide receivers. They trade everyone. They're going to be terrible. It turns out that there are other people who can catch passes who are not problems, who actually want to be around. And Diggs actually said, no, it was never. I never had a problem. You got to look at what I said. I never said I had a problem. Players always say that. because they don't ever want to be blamed. But it was clear that the marriage was going to end. Mm-hmm. And sometimes couples hang on until the last kid goes to college, and it doesn't always work out. Other times, you just say, we're going to do it right now and let the chips fall where they may. And I felt that was what happened with the Bills trade.
Yeah. I mean, I guess ultimately a net positive. It's a draft that's stocked with wide receivers. I would assume that Buffalo is going to take one either at 28 or move up. And boom, you got your young, new toy for Josh Allen. And like you said, let the other guys kind of shine. The other players who are on the roster. So it's going to be interesting to see what Buffalo does.
Yeah, and we talk about also what it is to trade up, and a lot of that going on in the draft right now. The question is who trades up, who doesn't. We would ask our GM a very simple question when talking about the draft, because the baseball draft is obviously much more difficult than the NFL draft because most of the players don't hit, and it's years before they do. But before we would talk about trading any player, we're trying to evaluate not just where they will be, but where they are today. In the NFL, it's so important. You can get someone at the 28 spot who's going to be more productive than the person at the 10 spot, but you trade up because you feel like, oh no, we're not going to get him.
Right.
And so we demand of our GMs, I want a depth chart in the draft because I don't want to feel like I have to have this guy or that guy, because desperation, one of my favorite lines, it's a terrible cologne. And when GMs have desperation or owners do, then you end up making mistakes that cost your team.
Yeah. Desperation is a terrible cologne. I like that.
Yeah, Tim McGraw is not giving you that cologne.
No. Tim McGraw gave me some good cologne.
That's true.
Not desperation.
Yeah, not weird at all. TJ said Tim McGraw was here and was like, you smell good, man. And then Tim McGraw sent him a bottle of his cologne.
Yeah.
Was that your intro line?
Yeah, that was more like the
hey,
outro.
Good to meet you. You smell great. That's so awkward, isn't it? Where do you go from there?
It was on his way out. So
It was. Thank God.
It was like a goodbye. By the way, you smell good. And yeah.
Did he send it courtesy of Rich Eisen?
No, I mean he sent it to here to the studio for me. Yeah.
Was there a note?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Like now you can smell like me? Like what kind of note does someone give?
Well, it says,
I'd like to hear the note, please.
We just went off on a tangent.
Can you read it? Just grab it. Read it. Just grab it and read it.
This is going to be good.
And the thing is, like, that was a day that I was out, and so I totally missed this. And I come back, and TJ's like, "Yeah, man, I told Tim McGraw he smelled good." Yeah. And then, like,
two months later,
a package comes, and it's a cologne from Tim McGraw.
So I said, "Bro, I hope this is after we did the whole interview. We spoke. I told him I saw him in concert a few years ago. Chopped it up. Blah blah blah. It wasn't the first time we met." And I said, "Hey, bro, I hope this doesn't sound weird, but I said, smell really good. Like, what is that?" He told me a Venice Creed. Mike and I looked it up. I was like, well, this is a little bit out of my tax bracket. And then 2 months later, Liz comes from the back. She's like, I got a present for you. And she hands me this and a note from Tim McGraw. This is TJ. Good to meet you, man. Hope you enjoy. Like, what kind of dude is Tim McGraw for him to remember me 2 months after the point? Like, well, just what a cool cat, man. And, yeah, and this cologne, which I'm wearing today, smells incredible.
Did it come via horseback? what took 2 months to get you the cologne?
Well, I'm sure it wasn't the priority in his life, David, to get a random brother that he met in July some cologne. But
McGraw's a corporation,
right? Come on.
All right, we're going to have Seth Greenberg here in a couple minutes, and I hope that people call in. You can call us at 844-204-RICH. That's 844-204-RICH. Bring it on. I want to hear what you all have to say, any questions you may have. And after the break, we're going to talk some college basketball with Seth Greenberg.
You smell good, too.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneaker peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
What is your best sports memorabilia that you have, that you're most proud of, or something that you love?
Oh, it's I've got a bunch of things that I love, but the one that I would have to say is the coolest, simply because it's not, because I was a baseball player, so baseball stuff means a lot to me. One year, a girlfriend of mine said, if you could have anything for Christmas this year, what would it be? Mm-hmm. And I said, an autographed baseball glove from Brooks Robinson. Because Brooks was from Arkansas. He grew up in Little Rock, North Little Rock. And I just loved him, you know, when he played with the Orioles. And so I thought, that's never going to happen. But if I could have anything, that's what it would be. And she chased him down. She got all the publicists and everybody else on the case. And Christmas morning, I opened it up, and there was an autographed book, a Brooks Robinson glove, and it said... and of course, you know, the glove from him, that's the thing, because sure. It was fielding, you know, and it said, from a huge fan, Brooks Robinson. I'm like, Brooks Robinson knows who I am. I'm done. This is all fine.
Did you ever put on the Brooks Robinson glove? Like literally put your hand in?
Oh, I put it on, but boy, do I protect it. I finally put it in plexiglass because it's, you know, the name might rub off, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Boy, that's a real dandy thing. McGuire also gave me a bat right after he broke it, you know.
Right after he broke the Maris?
No, after he broke his bat. Oh, after he grounded out to third. But
no, you should say it was home run number 67, home run 62.
But it was that year.
Okay.
It was that year, and he grounded out to third against the Dodgers, and he gave me the bat and his batting glove, which had dirt all over it and everything, so I've got that. And I got some good stuff over the years.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Woo. I'm David Sampson, and I am sitting right now at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger.
Oh.
Yes, it is. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Click Grainger.com. Just stop by. I'm loving the desk. It's the exact perfect desk for me.
Sturdy, ain't it?
Yeah, very sturdy. I feel good about it. There's a cooling mechanism. Very happy with the whole package. Thank you, Grainger.
He's sweating so bad already.
I'm not quite Albert Brooks-in. Seth Greenberg is here. I was so happy to have Seth here. Welcome, Seth. How are you? It's David Sampson.
Doing great. Any better? I couldn't stand myself. Flight got in a little bit late last night. Didn't get a whole lot of sleep. My wife still hasn't gotten here, but life is good. It's Final Four, man. It's the NCAA tournament. Go championship week, NCAA tournament, Final Four, and the Masters. Life is good.
I don't know if you were flying out of New York. I was last night, and I sat on the tarmac for 4 hours because of the storms back east.
Brutal.
But I was not going to miss an opportunity to sit in the chair and talk to you. Final Four is coming up. But the focus has been a little bit on the women's Final Four and on Caitlin Clark. But the thought of Connecticut repeating, what's the lead? What's your lead to get people more excited about men's? Because for the first time, the women's actually getting prices more.
Well, the price is more because there's only 17,000 seats. There's 70,000 seats for the men's tournament. Supply and demand is
love the math.
I mean, I'm not an economics major. I'm a broadcast journalism major, but supply and demand is something that really exists in every aspect of your life, whether it's a coach, a player, or seats at Final Four. We've got an amazing Final Four because we have great storylines. You know, we've got Purdue. Everyone was waiting for them to crash and burn all season long. Crash and burn. The backcourt's not good enough. Fairleigh Dickinson, St. Peter's. You know what? They're here. You got Alabama, analytically driven. You know, 11 years ago, Nate Oates was a high school basketball coach. Now he's coaching the Final Four. They play like at a breakneck speed. They're going to shoot a zillion threes, and they're playing against the defending national champions who lost five of their top eight scorers and three guys to the NBA and have absolutely dominated the tournament so far. And then you got NC State. I mean, come on now. You got DJ, but you got the DJ spinning the hits. DJ Burns, DJ Horn. DJ Burns has been a phenomenon. They changed their style of play. They won their last nine games after losing five in a row. Michael Connell went from playing 20 minutes a game to 32. Well, he's played the most minutes of anyone in the Final Four in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, there's so many good storylines. It's going to be an amazing Final Four. It never disappoints.
It never disappoints.
And great storylines.
Seth, I've been thinking about something as it relates to NC State and a lot of press. An 11 seed, it doesn't happen often, only a handful of times. And I'm wondering with now one and done, NIL, the transfer portal being as full as it is, in UConn trying to repeat, these stories are actually related. The difficulty in repeating, having lower seeds, do you think that will become more common now because the playing field really is more level than it's ever been?
For another year, that COVID year levels the playing field. I mean, you're playing against guys that are 24, 25 years old, some teams. I mean, they're rebuilding their rosters through the portal. And if you get the right collection of guys, like Kevin Keats has nine transfers on his team. First of all, they're not a Cinderella. I mean, Cinderella is the story. But, I mean, they're from the ACC. To get to the NCAA tournament, they beat Virginia, the winningest program in the ACC over the last 10 years. They beat Duke, and they beat North Carolina. All right, and then they went into the tournament, and you look at their journey in the tournament. So, look, they're an ACC program. They struggled early on. They found their identity. They backed off their defense to the half court. They played through DJ Burns. It's a great story. I say it all the time. I grew up in Long Island, played in Long Island. I was born in Queens, grew up in Long Island. And Jimmy Valvano lived one town over from me in Seaford, Long Island. His dad used to ref my basketball games, Rocky Valvano. All right, he actually gave me a T1 game. I didn't deserve it. I promise you, I didn't deserve it.
What did you do, Seth?
I probably said something I shouldn't say.
Okay.
But anyway, I could see Jimmy V up above going, here we go again. Here we go again. You know, I mean, that's just the way Jimmy was. And, you know, it's a great story. But, The run to the Final Four has been amazing. The run through the ACC tournament, five games in 5 days, is probably as amazing.
I'm not sure that we've ever seen that. Have we, gentlemen, seen five?
Jerry Mack.
Wins?
Jerry Mack.
Because to me, it was so unlikely to happen.
Right, but we didn't make the final. Yeah. I went to Syracuse, Seth. We didn't make the Final Four that year.
No, you didn't make the Final Four, but just the whole idea of what they went through on that run.
Winning five in a row to win Big East, right.
So when I'm thinking about the Final Four, I think from a story standpoint, you want to see NC State win, make the final game, and you want to see Connecticut because you want to have a chance of repeat because then you can't go wrong. Right. But the best part about a Final Four is when it doesn't matter who wins, that either way it's a compelling matchup, and I think that's where the men are, Seth.
Yeah, like everyone wants to see Zach Edey against Connecticut. I mean, you know, Zach Edey, the immovable object, you know, their story is great. Is it Virginia 2.0? I mean, that's kind of a big question. That's right there. That's for the guys that people that say that Zach Edey's just big. That play right there, that block at the end of the game to come off the weak side and make that block to secure the win for Purdue, this dude can flat play. He runs the floor. He can defend ball screens. He can score over either shoulder. He's really good. But that play, that is a great picture right there. Is he giving someone a finger? No, he's not.
That's the point, sir. No, we do that on the show here, but only when Rich is away can we give anyone the finger. But we'll stick with the pointer. When you're coaching and you're coaching Final Four game, are you focusing on your surroundings to get to the final game? Are you saying we're happy to be here and that you're focused only on the one game? How do you take away the distraction? That's something when I was running a team that was so important, trying to get the players not to be distracted by ticket requests, by family being around, by all of the hoopla around it. What do you do? Because these are kids, even though we don't treat them that way.
Well, first of all, they're no longer kids. They're very wealthy employees. I mean, NIL is not NIL. It's pay for play. These collectives are out of control. But having said that, Terry Holland, when I was an assistant coach of Virginia in 84, Terry, I remember him. First of all, you take care of all the ticket requests and family situations well in advance. Before you get on that plane to get to Phoenix, that's taken care of. You'll give a little bit of family time, but it's routine, 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 routine. The biggest thing is, the day of the game, I still remember this as vividly as possible. I'm sitting there in the locker room. I actually had that scout. I gave the scout a report. And then Coach Holland steps up, said, final words. And he said, it's not enough to get here. He said, you'll never hurt more than you've hurt in your life after a game that if we walk in this locker room at the end of the game and we know we didn't do everything humanly possible to have a chance to win this game, it's an empty feeling walking off that court, not getting a chance to play again and playing the championship game. And like, it was the first time, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm going like, here we're in the Final Four. It's a great accomplishment. We were similar. We were, I don't know what seed we were. I mean, we lost in the first round of the ACC tournament. We weren't very good. We had Othell Wilson, Tom Sheehy, Holden Palamis, Jimmy Miller, a really good team. Rick Carlisle actually was on that team, coach of the Pacers. And it, at that moment, it hit me. Like, you're walking out that door, you know, the Final Four practice with 40,000 people there, that's great. You know, the police escort when you land, that's great. But we're here to get something done. And that's why I like Connecticut in this thing, because I go over there and watch them practice all the time. The standard's the standard. Danny Hurley is Saban-esque. He holds anyone and everyone accountable to the standard. Everything they do in practice, everything they do in film, whether it's skill work, whether it's concept work, whether it's defensive stance, whether it's closeouts, whether it's 5-on-4 or 4-on-3, whether it's ODOs, which is offense, defense, offense, no matter what, there's a standard to what they're held to. And if they don't fulfill that standard, he just goes, stairs.
Do you drop
– and the coaches have to do this, run the stairs with the players.
Do you drop a Saban-esque often? That is a
– No.
Quite
no.
a compliment.
No,
and
I, yeah.
What
no,
other coaches have that?
Izzo, Saban-esque, been, you know, and a similar thing about Saban worked at Michigan State. Obviously, Tom is Michigan State. I think Izzo is probably the closest one to that. Everyone coaches in their own personality. Danny coaches in his own personality, and his players love him. I sat in their film session after the Creighton loss before we did College Game Day. We did a piece on Danny, and I go up there all the time, and that was a brutal 1-hour film session. I can tell you that. I mean, like, the paint on the walls, gone. It was brutal. All right. And it was real and it was honest. And he had some slides in between to kind of lighten up a little bit. At the end of the film session, he has a way to bring those guys back. Say, all right, now we're cleansed. All right. You know, we understand. And then he was going to one of those deprivation tanks, you know, where you lay in. It's like, he goes, now I'm going to go get butt naked, put my headphones on, and be at peace for an hour, and I'll be ready to go tomorrow. And those guys were laughing their asses off, jumping up and down, hugging them, high-fiving them. And I'm like, oh, he just killed them for an hour. But he has a gift. He's real. I mean, like, Danny Hurley, there's nothing fake about him. You know about his journey. There's nothing fake about him. He's as real can get. He coaches him every day. He loves him up the same way. And he takes no shortcuts. You know, when he goes to the portal for a specific reason, you know, it was Tristan Newton a year ago. It was Cam Spencer this year. You know, there he wasn't afraid to redshirt Alex Caravan. He brought Donovan Klingon along. They've got an 8-man rotation. One guy that's probably going to be a lottery pick besides playing in that Stephen Castle, a freshman who's just a lockdown defender who is not spoiled by the process. I mean, it really is. It's fun to watch just how they do things and what they do.
So is he going to get frustrated like Saban with the new rules in college? Because when you say Saban-esque, the first thing I thought to myself is, well, then he's not long for coaching. Because with the changes that have occurred in college, Saban basically said, peace out. I don't want any part of this. And he articulated that. Have you heard any of that around Hurley?
No. See, it was different time in their careers. I mean, you know, Danny Hurley's not even 50 yet. Obviously, Saban was at the end of his career. And Danny Hurley's smart enough to know, look, I mentor a bunch of coaches. I have a lot of guys that have been in this business a really long time. Like, NIL and the portal is part of the business now, just like recruiting is, just like scheduling is, just like practice preparation is, like just like going to booster functions at the end of the season when you go on those tours. Like, when I was at Virginia Tech and the season ended, you went recruiting and then you went all these booster functions, the Hokie tour, and, you know, 4 days a week. You're on the road, you know, shaking hands, kissing babies, and eating really bad chicken. But it was part of the job. Well, part of the job right now is embracing your collective. Part of the job right now is cultivating the people that can give to your collective. Because, like, it's hard for a booster to say no to a coach. It's easier for a booster to say no to an assistant athletic director. So it's hosting functions at your house. It's being getting people behind the curtain and giving people access to you in a different way. It might be giving a speech to someone's business. You know, there are a lot of things that are involved in it, but you either have to embrace it and buy into it and understand this is just a job that you've decided to take, and that's what Danny's done. I mean, he doesn't live in the portal. He's not bringing seven guys in the portal. He's bringing a piece in. But the NIL had look. We have to find a way to figure this thing out. There's no transparency. I mean, you hear the numbers. I mean, AJ Store talked. His mom's running his second transfer. We're starting at $1 million. You know, I guess allegedly Kansas countered with $750, and they said no. He said, well, that's our best offer. The guy averaged 14 points a game on a team that, you know, didn't win a game in the NCAA tournament or won one game in the NCAA tournament. I mean, like, we're out of whack. There's got to be transparency because you've got these runners that you are, well, they're agents now, but they used to be runners, and they're trying to set basically the bar for what people, players are worth, and it's kind of out of whack.
But it's not free agency, Seth. That's what everybody wanted.
Well, it is wrong. It's free agency. All right. NBA, they have free agency?
They have a form of free agency. It is not right. Straight every, free agency.
Every year? Is it every year?
I wish it were. No. I wanted that in baseball. The players would not allow it. I would love everyone to be a free agent every year.
You want a year to year? Every single year?
Every year. You know what that
would do? It's impossible to manage. There's got to be transparency. Here's what college basketball needs. I'm going to fix it in 2 seconds. Two-year contracts. On those contracts, you have a set, basically, base salary. And then you have incentives. Because we forgot to talk about education. Education's gone out the window in college athletics. It's gone out the window. So you have an academic progress incentive. You've got a GPA incentive. You've got a graduation incentive. You've got a community service incentive. All right. You've got all those incentives. And you know what else you're going to have in there? You're going to have a buyout like I had. When I went from Long Beach State to South Florida, I had to pay. When I went from South Florida to Virginia Tech, I had to pay. You want out? That's fine. Pay the buyout.
But you would just negotiate to get more from where you're going, more than your buyout. All buyouts are is they set the bar of what you need to leave.
Yeah, but buyouts also pay back to the institution that you're leaving that invested in you, which enables them to go get the next coach or the next player. And like, here's the deal. I mean, so you play for – if you sign a two-year contract, you're number one, you want to leave, and you've got a half-million-dollar buyout, all right, there's a cost of doing business. You can leave – you know what? That next school, if they're going to pay the buyout, so then they're going to pay you $1 million and they're going to pay $500,000 buyout. You better, you know, there's got to be something that we have, some form of responsibility. Because, like, ever so long, the coaches can go anywhere they want. Yeah, they can. And there's usually a very hefty buyout. I paid over $500,000 in buyouts, and I didn't make the money that these guys are making now.
But you did it for a reason, I would assume.
I did it for a reason, to be the coach at a higher level, or if there was a change of athletic director at one of my jobs. You know, it was a new AD coming in. I never liked to work for a new AD.
I'm fascinated by Seth.
Other reasons.
If you think about what we're talking about from a business standpoint, you said education's out the window. I would put it.
Which is disgusting.
It should never be that way, but I'm not sure that it was ever in the window, and we can debate that.
Oh, no, I know. I know it was in the window because I did it for 33 years.
Well,
I know it was in the window. I know the bridge I built for my former players that are now doctors and CPAs and lawyers and teachers and doing all. But you know what? Because education was important to us. Like, I spoke to a coach the other day, all right? And I speak to guys every single day. All right. And it used to be, what's your major? You'll meet with the dean of the school. You'll meet with the university president. We'll talk about role and playing time and style of play and fit. All right. You know what it is now? It's one thing. It's one thing.
How money.
Much? And you know what? Here's what we're going to have. And I know I've gotten off target of the NCAA tournament. Here's what we're going to have, you know, just to give you an idea. We're going to have a generation of guys that I'll use Nigel Pack as an example. Nigel Pack's a nice player at Miami, got paid $400 a year the last 2 years. I think he's coming back. Apartment, a car. Not an NBA player. Nice player. not an NBA player, going to have to go overseas. All right, he's going to go overseas. You know how, what his starting salary is going to be? Probably $70,000. And if he doesn't play well, you know, let's take like just any player. If he doesn't play well, he'll be sent home. Because in Europe, if you don't play well, you get sent home. Like, we're going to, and you know, we talk about mental health all the time. That's mental health issue. We're setting young people up to fail because we've lost the value of education. We've lost the idea of building a bridge for people to cross to make sure when they take the ball away, they're going to be successful. We've lost a little bit of the fight to get through the tougher times to instead just go, you know, and we see it in grassroots basketball. I don't like this team. I'll switch another team. I'll end it. And that's great. And people say, well, you know, coaches, yeah, I understand that. You know,
we've been dealing with that, Seth. It's such a complicated conversation because in baseball, we're drafting kids out of high school, and we can pretend we're giving them skills, but the majority of them are not going to make the big leagues. And even if they do, they're not going to be able to make a permanent living. Yep. And they've bypassed college. So the way we make ourselves feel better,
where do they go back to?
Well, we fund a scholarship. So we actually allow the players when they're drafted. And TJ, I don't know, this was always interesting to me. The number of players we had to feed, mm-hmm. we would pay for them to go back to college once their career was over.
Really?
And so we had to reserve for that in our budget every year in case a kid wanted to go back to college, we would pay the tuition. How many kids over the years actually chose when their career ended to go back to college to get an education for free? What would be your guess? Every kid who got released?
10%.
That is
10%.
High. Wow. It got to the point where I stopped reserving for the college scholarship plan because it was easier to self-insure it. If we got a call from someone, hey, I want to go to Duke. All right, we'll cut the check for 50 grand. Go to Duke. And we would negotiate the semesters in advance. So I agree that education is an issue that has not been dealt with. But we're getting so far away from education. We want to call these kids employees now. You said it when we started, Seth, that they're employees. By definition, if they're employees as an employer, I'm not focused on my employee's education. I already went through their resume. I've hired them. I'm interested in what they'll do for me as an employee.
Yeah, but here's the deal. There's got to be a value of, like, the college experience has a value. And if we're doing that, we're cheating young people. We're just cheating. And that's just me. That's a guy that was a career coach that it was important to them. We're cheating them. And we're sending a bad message. And, like, you know, it's like when I was in Long Beach State, one thing I did every year is I went to graduation, even if I didn't have players graduating that year. Because Long Beach State back then, it was amazing. It was a university that had a lot of first-generation graduates, all right? And it was like a cool thing to see first-generation graduates. And then, you know, if you have a first-generation graduate, the odds of that person's child becoming a graduate is really high. It's really high. So we say, well, you know, it's no big thing. And those baseball players, you say, that didn't go back. Well, yeah, I give you a better idea. Go back and see what those guys are doing now.
I have a pretty good idea.
Someone convinced them to chase a dream. It's just great. You all want to chase a dream. All right. Someone basically, instead of like being a parent saying the stove is hot and being realistic, because the young people and the parents, and parents are part of the problem still as well, they're going to listen, seek out someone who's going to tell them what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. I always said parenting is all about telling your kids what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. Coaching is telling the players what they need to hear, not what they want to hear.
Well, we got four sets of kids right now, employees or not, who are chasing a dream, and it will all unfold over the next 4 or 5 days. Seth Greenberg will be there. I appreciate that you took the time to be with us this morning, especially after tough travel. Thank you, Seth, and good luck this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care, Seth. What an interesting conversation. Ooh. Where he was quick to say that the players are employees.
Right off the top, like you said.
And that's a very controversial thing to say, because that is what some people believe is true and others believe should never be true. And it is being litigated in courts as we talk. I guess we know where Seth stands on that subject. It was nice of him to join. Who do you think is going to win? Who do you have?
I'm going to say Purdue.
Ooh. All UConn. Right, good. I'm not.
UConn.
UConn for the repeat?
Yep. I mean, you know, in our poll that we did, I picked Purdue. It's going to be tough to beat UConn, but I guess I got to stick with who I pick. So, Purdue.
I hate the concept of sticking where you what you did. I do that with your bracket, right? Because they're in the bracket. Oh, I got to go with that. No, forget the bracket. I'm going NC State.
Oh,
do it.
Well, yeah,
all for Jimmy V.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be a beautiful thing. DJ Burns is like America's hero. Or what's the male version of a Cinderella story right now?
It's always that would be story.
Ken.
Ken story?
He's Ken.
Ken story?
But yeah, I mean, he
got to go. I don't ever want to go. We'll be right back here on The Rich Eisen Show.
We'll be back, though.
This is David Sampson.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
My favorite guests, and I'm not just saying that because you're sitting right here.
I think you are. What are you on, steroids or something?
I am actually on steroids, Bryan Cranston. Last Flag Flying in select theaters now.
We're going to have to disqualify this show because of your steroid use.
You know what? I thought about that before taking that steroid.
Now, wouldn't it be disheartening if you took the steroid and you had the best show ever? Then you'd go, oh my God, oh, I have to take more steroids. How can you go off the steroids?
Since you and I last spoke here on this show, your Dodgers went to the World Series.
There was that five-hour game that went in. That was insane.
It was insane. I am proud to say I stuck around to extra innings for that night. I did see some people in this town, people that you would know, people that we have all seen on television. Look,
call them out.
I can't do it.
Do it.
I can't.
You're on steroids. What the hell do you care?
I do have that as a fallback position, do I not? But I would never do that to you.
It is. Your Honor, I was on steroids at the time when I made that comment.
When somebody from Arrested Development got up.
Yes.
But,
Jason Bateman.
No,
you've been in your face, Jason.
There's a lot of people.
I'm disappointed, Jason.
Will Arnett.
Wow. But it wasn't.
It just amazes me seeing in Breaking and in Better Call Saul the number of characters whose demise eventually is met because of your character.
Me?
I know exactly. It is remarkable.
I unfortunately have that association. If I spend any amount of time with someone, they end up dying surprisingly. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest you get life insurance. you know, you want to protect your family.
Yeah, everything you do that. Okay.
Sorry.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. It's David Sampson sitting in for Rich, keeping his chair mighty, mighty hot for the next 2 days.
Coming in quite hot.
Speaking of coming in hot, if you want to call, we're live.
Let's do it.
844-204-RICH, as in Rich. Give us a call. I want to take a call. Can we do that?
Let's do it. It's great. Terzo, what up, buddy?
Terzo.
What's up, boys? How's everyone today? David, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
How are you? Nice to see you.
I'm doing well. So I got to agree with you whenever you're talking to Seth. I don't think school's really been a part of it for quite some time. I'm 39 years old, and I'll be completely honest. A lot of my friends who went and played college ball, it was never about school. If you got an education, great, but you know, at the end of the day, they were there to either play basketball, football, or baseball.
I didn't really want to burst his bubble, but I'll tell you, I'm 56 years old, and in the Wisconsin class of 1990, let's just say that the football players, we knew what classes they were going to and what classes they weren't going to, even on a big campus. And that's now, I think I went to college like 68 years ago. And so I understand why Seth would say that, because for him, it may be very much a priority, but I agree with you that it really isn't. I mean, let's not even kid ourselves. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm a big 49er fan, so I kind of want to get your guys' take on this, but I kind of want to compare it to this kind of with the Steph Diggs deal that was going on yesterday. Is there's a lot of chatter about Brandon Ayuk being traded, and the 49ers don't really seem to be budging. And I think if they were ever to move him, they would be looking to get value, whereas, like you said, with the Bills, it's kind of a throwaway pick in two drafts.
Yeah, so I think what the Niners will do, if they don't have a roster issue or a player issue, as I like to call it, but maybe it's not good to say it publicly, then you can wait. You should never be forced to make a trade, because if you have no leverage in a negotiation, you're going to lose that trade. And other GMs tend to know the difference. So it's no shock to me that the Texans were able to get Diggs for what they got him for. So I think that the Niners have no reason to move. Why would they? So I think you're going to be okay.
And that was kind of my feeling on it as well, too.
Thanks, Terzo. See you, buddy.
Hey, appreciate you guys. Bye, Brockman.
Be well.
All right, DJ.
All right, brother.
Cheers.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with Ayuk. I mean, they can just pick up his fifth-year option, franchise tag him. Like, he's with them for at least another 2 years if they want him. I'm wondering if Buffalo maybe thinks about making a move and acquiring Brandon Ayuk now. I kind of saw people talking about that online yesterday.
That would be a quick turnaround.
Quick fix, too.
Because he's got till September, don't forget.
Right.
As he said, top of the show is, we can take care of this team. We've got till September to make it right. On the other hand, we're not worse today than we were before the trade.
Which is kind of an insane thing to say.
I actually laughed at that.
How could you not?
GMs are trying. He's trying. You got to give him credit for that.
Oh, the old college tried.
He didn't have to speak. Was he scheduled to speak? He didn't have to.
Oh, we forced them to. Yes. You have to address the media
after a
trade.
Oh, so ownership is like, hey, go out there and
we'll give you talking points.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to make you embarrass yourself.
All right. Would you argue he did embarrass himself by what he said?
For fans of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, which is my day job, yes, because that is the type of thing that I would talk about in great detail on my daily show.
Yeah.
Because I want to give people insight into really what he wasn't saying.
Right.
Which is far more important than what people are saying. I love reading between the lines when there are GMs or presidents or coaches talking. And coach speak is a great expression.
It's great.
It's great.
Coach speak generally means it's like caca. It's not, I don't know if we can, like, can we say that on the show?
Sure.
Caca, I wouldn't say the four-letter version.
Yeah. No, that's an expression that's meant to mean, I'm not sure I'm buying it. I love the rah-rah coach when you can get in there and really motivate
your
guys.
Like the Dan Campbells, they're amazing.
The whole kneecap thing was something.
It's amazing, yeah.
I'd run through a brick wall for my coach. I like when my players say that. Of course, they never would.
No.
And the minute they're not playing, they don't like their manager anymore.
Exactly.
So they love them when they're in the lineup. We had players like that who would say, "Oh, we're thank you for this manager. I love him. Why aren't I hitting fifth?
Am I batting third? I love you."
Well, because you stink. Well, wait, but I'm getting paid. That's true. But you're going to ride the bench now. It's always good to tell players, listen, we're going to play the best people we have. Because some teams don't do that. They pay the players getting paid the most.
Baseball, who cares? Guaranteed contracts.
Guaranteed contracts is the bane of my existence. What I would give to have run an NFL team where once you stink, you're just gone.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker, who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer, looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller, who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the rotor, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.